Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hello and welcome to The Art Detective with me, Dr. Yanina Ramirez. I'm an Oxford art historian, a lecturer and a broadcaster, but most importantly, I'm your chief investigator of images. Every week I'm joined by an able assistant, and today I am actually in Paris, sweet Paris in the springtime. I'm joined by Christophe Leribaud, who is the director of Le Petit Palais Art Gallery and Museum. Christophe, thank you so much. I have hijacked you from another talk we were doing together and dragged you over to a cafe to do an art detective with me. But just to tell the art detective listeners a bit about your background and your work at Le Petit Palais.
The Petit Palais is a city museum with a nice collection, but also a very nice building. It dates from the Universal Exhibition of Paris 1900, with a funny architecture, a lot of ornament, golden gates and so on, and a hidden garden. It's a place where you can go first to drink a cup of tea. And second, you can visit the collection, which is a free entrance museum, like in the British way. So we have also a lot of temporary exhibitions. But the permanent collection is interesting. It's not a highly encyclopedic collection. We have a bit of everything, but with some gaps and some periods for which, on the contrary, we have a lot of things, like the Belle Époque collection, which is also the date of the buildings, but also Greek vases and paintings by Courbet or 18th century French Greuze and Fragonard.
Well, I was delighted to get a personal tour with you yesterday, and I had never been there before. I'd been to Le Grand Palais, but I'd never been to Le Petit Palais, and the building itself is magical with its floating staircases that you pointed out to me made in concrete. But there's this wonderful richness to all the surface decoration, the painting. I was really struck going around Le Petit Palais by the strength of its collection, particularly in the end of the 19th century, going into the 20th century. That's a time really we could describe as La Belle Époque, the beautiful age. What sort of timings have we got for that?
Yes, it's a period of an incredible optimism where architects try new experiment, new techniques. Artists are so happy to use as much as possible the colors. They do not hesitate to work on the large scale and to mix painting but with sculpture, but also they are very interested in ornament and furniture. We have to imagine people with dress who are designed with the same pattern than the wallpaper and their books and everything. It's a wonderful period. Sometimes a little vulgar. But artists and people do not hesitate to try things. So it's a very interesting and enjoyable period.
And could we say then that it's 1880 to 1914, or is that still too broad?
I think the 80s are a little more serious than the really 1900s, which are a real period of when French have recovered a powerful space in Europe, which is a very short period because, as you know, after this is a nightmare of the First World War. But at that time, with the colonial expansion also and all the conquest of technology, you know, the movie theater, so many new things, the underground and the... people in Paris could think that the new century will be such better times than the former one.
Yeah, so the artwork that we're looking at really is from the height of this Belle Epoque, this beautiful age, isn't it? Do you want to give us the title of it?
It's a portrait of this famous actress, Sarah Bernhardt. It dated, in fact, much a little earlier, in 1876. Mm-hmm. But it gave an idea of what will be the development of the Art Nouveau later. Sarah Bernhardt was the type of woman who create new fashion. So her portrait, if it wasn't dated, if we didn't know it was exhibited at a salon and so on, we thought it would be much later.
Yes, you could put it at 1920, 1930. It's got that sort of decadence, hasn't it? It's absolutely stunning. And I saw this when you took me around Le Petit Palais. Mm-hmm. It's huge. It's 2.5 meters high by 2 meters wide. And the colour, the luxury of this portrait, it's just astonishing. But it's painted 1876. And what do we know about the artist?
Georges Clairin made some Orientalist paintings, but a lot of portraits. He made some larger scale paintings to decorate all the world. At that time, there was a real need for the artist to recover all the new monuments and new buildings. You know, we were building everywhere in the city. He made decoration for the theater, but he was especially attracted by Sarah Bernhardt. Mm-hmm. I think he was among her lovers.
Okay.
She had many others.
She had lots of lovers.
But he stayed with her anyway. Uh-huh. And he died, by the way, in Belle-Île-en-Mer, in his countryside home. Uh-huh. And he stayed always very connected with Sarah Bernhardt. Even if Sarah Bernhardt, you know, have rich lovers, and artists, and bankers. But Clairin was fascinated by Sarah Bernhardt. He made several portraits of her, but this one is the main one, the larger one, the one the most famous, which have been displayed in the salons, in the official exhibition of the state, which takes place every year. And it itself, it's a promotion of herself. She was famous at that time as a young sociétaire de la Comédie Française, a young actress at the State Theatre. Yeah. But she wasn't so famous. And suddenly at the salon, we have an incredible portrait, large scale. She's looking to the visitors, you know.
Really is. I mean, that's the thing that strikes me about this. I think she's gorgeous. I can see why he was obsessed with her, because she is. There's these stunning eyes. And actually, the way that he's painted her, she is really in command of this scene, isn't she? There's this wonderful serpentine flow to her, and this incredible collection of, I suppose, lace and feathers, and the dog, of course, echoing the shape. It's all very sensual, isn't it?
Yeah, and it seems that the dog is part of the shape of her dress.
Mm-hmm.
and strangely enough, the dog is lying on a furse, which is a little strange. It's a mix of a luxurious atmosphere, a little Orientalist, with a lot of velvet and silk and exotic plants.
Uh-huh, and the Orientalist aspect of this is important, isn't it? It's coming through in the Academy and paintings that are coming, being, you know, officially drawn, but it's a cultural phenomenon that France is opening up its imagination to the East and to the exotic, isn't
there
it?
There is some souvenir to the Odalisque, and but she's not naked, by the way.
No.
She has a wonderful dress of imagined grey white silk.
Yes.
And which is so, but it's very strange. Instead of the usually the women of that period are quite, what would you say?
Buxom and broad and yeah, fleshy. But yes. She's very, very slim, isn't
very,
she?
Very slim. Which
yeah.
is not the fashion of that time. She created this fashion.
Okay. So she is sort of the pioneer of this slim, sexy new look.
That's strange that she succeeded to be very famous. Being different from the stereotype of the period. She succeeded to self-impose her own style.
So she is famous, though, isn't she? I mean, we're talking actress. She's a stage actress. But we are coming into the dawning of cinema, of the change that will see these people elevated to superstar legend. Was she very recognisable? Was she a big part of the Parisian scene?
Well, she became really like a diva. She was worldwide famous actress. She was performing in the deep South America.
Really, traveling to
Manaus. She had triumphs in Buenos Aires, or born in Russia. She went several times, you make several tours of the world, and each time she arrived at the Harbor of New York, there was a crowd welcoming her, and people giving her tons of flowers and so on. It's totally crazy.
Oh my gosh, I had no idea. So that is serious superstar
and
level.
And she performed in French, serious play by Racine and so on. But she was welcomed like a real star. And you can imagine that 80% of the people were there to wait her at the airport couldn't understand the French language.
Bizarre.
But anyway, she was the star.
I love this idea that they can't even understand what the play is about, but they're the celebrity of her. So, I mean, this is a dawning age of celebrity, isn't it? Particularly females. La Belle Époque, that is a time when I suppose we see women starting to develop their own sense of self-worth, but identity and freedom. They're coming out of the home and into the theatres, into the cabaret bars. This is a big moment of social change, isn't it, La Belle Époque?
Of course, the huge space for the woman at the top of the society, but also she was a businesswoman. Uh-huh. You know, she knew very well how to organize a theater. She also asked to great artists like Murat for the posters, so she knew what was the promotion of the artist.
Oh, she actually
place.
Commissioned those sorts of
course, yes,
images. Okay, so they're so famous now, aren't they? I mean, we think of the Murat, Le Chat Noir, the famous sort of advertising posters, mm-hmm. and so she's behind all of that as well.
Yeah, of course, wonderful posters. She asked Misha to design also her jewellery and a lot of things in her home. She was very clever to promote a character, her works, and she also made herself a lot of sculpture. She could sometimes sell to all the people who were... When she arrived in a foreign country, she obtained, of course, huge amount of money to perform in such a theatre, but you could also sell some of her artworks.
You showed me one, didn't you, Christophe? It was like, I suppose, a sabre or something. It was a sculpture made of metal. And how would you describe it? It's sort of... It had a relatively sharp side, but it's not a functioning object. It's a sculpture. It's an art piece.
Yeah. She had her home in Belle-Île, in the south of Brittany, and she makes sculpture from algus. So she made molds of the algus, and then she creates strange objects.
Oh my gosh, so she's moulding seaweed, algae, things mm-hmm. that she's finding, mm-hmm. and then sculpting, yeah. casting from
yes.
them.
And
God, that's weird.
Doing bronze with that. It's a very early step of the Art Nouveau aesthetic.
Yes, because of the natural world kind of creeping in with the metallic and with the industrial. I find it fascinating. And it was a very strange object you showed me. But she's clever, isn't she? Because she takes these almost as merchandise mm-hmm. and sells them when she's abroad. And that pays for her to keep up her heady lifestyle, doesn't it? Because she's almost on the brink of bankruptcy quite a few times.
Of course, because you have a standing of life incredible, and you can imagine a lot of people working for her. And she was running a theatre in Paris, which was always going to collapse.
Which was her theatre then, do you know?
Le Théâtre Sarah Bernard.
Exactly, called after her.
But she was very good, in fact, to find each time a new solution to save her. And when she died, her burial was incredible, with millions of people on the streets, like the burial of Victor Hugo.
Wow. So she really is an icon of her time. So the fact that we're seeing this painting of her, what is it, do you think, that makes this painting so innovative? Because to me, this looks modern. This looks eye-catching, vibrant. It's unlike anything else I've seen. What is it for you that is so distinctive?
That's the line of her body and the dress, the dog. It creates striking image. Mm. We have a lot of society portraits of life, nice woman and the bunker's pose.
Yeah, and they're always sort of quite static or still, always... I mean, there are some interesting shapes coming in the portraiture, aren't there? Mm-hmm. So in this time of the Belle Epoque, I suppose women want to be seen as a bit more free in their portraits. Mm-hmm. But this is totally different, isn't it? Because it has got that serpentine feeling. She is in control completely, isn't she?
She looks really like a modern Sphinx.
Absolutely.
Looking at us, like we wonder if she will destroy us like the others.
Good point, though. There is a certain mystical quality here that, you know, yeah, will we turn to stone in her gaze, you know? But I think also the luxury of her surroundings, the red of that drapery that she's reclining on. But I suppose for me as well, this to me is quite a strong image of femininity, because she's completely in control, isn't she?
It's not a trophy portrait.
No.
It's not a portrait of a rich heir of a strong tradition, not a portrait of the widow of someone very rich. We feel that she has paid herself, the painter, the dress, the hotel particulier in the Parc Monceau. That's her own successful...
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds. And they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
She portrayed her own success.
But that is so important, isn't it? Because right up until this point, really, right up until the last century, mm-hmm. women were always being pictured in art by other people. So male mm-hmm. patrons would want a nude of their mistress, or they'd want mm-hmm. something titillating in the bedroom. But never in their own right. I think you're absolutely right, Christophe. I think what she looks like is, I am the patron. I have paid for this piece of work, and I know how I want to be represented. And that makes it radical, I think. Are there other images of its time that are looking like this now? Because in Le Petit Palais, there's another reclining woman on the opposite side. How does this stand up against the others?
That's here, my question. So a wonderful portrait of Madame de Lancey mm-hmm. by Carolus Durand, another society artist very famous at that time. But Madame de Lancey was a woman with... she wasn't a prostitute, but she managed to have three or four husbands, you know, one after the others. So she was quite a successful woman, but she... That's not at all like Sarah Bernard. We made our success from her work as an actress, as a creator.
Can we say then that Sarah Bernard was not? She wasn't a courtesan. She wasn't a prostitute. That area of her life.
Perhaps at the real beginning, but she was really. She was more than this, really.
Exactly, more than the sum of that, because that's again something we're seeing with La Belle Epoque, this beautiful age, that women may start out in small ways, moving the way upwards, but to be able to break that social barrier, to go to superstar levels, to be a businesswoman, to be her own marketing agent, to market her identity, her brand. She is unique. She's so interesting. We were talking earlier, weren't we, about things like the Moulin Rouge becoming a part of La Belle Epoque. And this idea of dance, movement, and most importantly, entertainment. Mm-hmm. Do you think that really is a key to understanding, you know, this painting?
She was a more serious actress. Mm. She performed great character in the dramatic, like L'Aiglon by Edmond Rostand. You create some very strong character of the theatre of that time by Victorien Sardou, by other artists. So she wasn't dancing on the cabaret. She was a great actress performing in important scenes. So
it's I suppose it's the way it's filtering down through society, isn't it? Because with the Moulin Rouge, you've got the idea that working girls, working class people can move their way up through the cabaret and possibly even marry in to high society. There is a sense of social mobility at this stage, isn't there? This image, although it's 1876, did you say? Mm-hmm. To you, is this an image of La Belle Époque?
Yes, because of the style. Uh-huh. It could have been done at the Belle Époque, but it's different. I don't think when you see this portrait, you think you could got married with her.
No.
She's a diva, a living goddess. But, no.
You wouldn't want to marry her. She looks too fiery, doesn't she? But I think also this idea of the expansion of the French Empire at this stage, after the Franco-Prussian Wars, there's this period of recovery, isn't there, where they are going out trading and connecting with exotic places and bringing back exotica. And I suppose one of the people that in the UK, I suppose, we think about most as epitomising that would be someone like Picasso, because Picasso shows the influence of Orientalism, of different exotic influences in his art. But is this something that's coming through the academy as well? Is there a sense of the Oriental and the exotic coming out in these large-scale paintings?
Perhaps in the fabrics.
Uh-huh.
Of course, all those embroideries and the fact that she's not seated, she's really half lying on cushions. So that's very Oriental.
Yes, and the colours, I presume, as well, the palettes of these big portraits. I tend to think of academy paintings as quite big and brown and bland, but these are bright, aren't they? I mean, this red really strikes me, but the turquoise and the gold as well. And as you said, you know, there's even the exotic plant creeping in.
Clairin, the artist, went in Morocco and in Spain. He was very influenced by Delacroix. Of course, Delacroix was died, but he was very influenced by his works. Mm. And he managed to see the place where Delacroix went.
And you have worked a lot on Delacroix, haven't you? And when you put Delacroix, Géricault, those sort of romantic painters alongside a painter like this, to me that seems quite a contrast. Would you agree?
Of course, it is. Well, 30 years later, or 50 years later, so it's quite different. It's something crazy when you look at the 19th century history of paintings. Things are going so quick.
I know, and that's it. The contrast between this and you see it so well in your gallery in Le Petit Palais. The speed with which art is changing. You almost turn a corner, and the next movement's taking place before your eyes. And this is again, I suppose, the importance of La Belle Époque for industry, technology, social mobility. So much is happening in this time, isn't it? I mean, we were just talking about science. You've got Louis Pasteur with pasteurization. You've got Marie Curie with developing antibiotics. This is a big time of change, isn't it?
I think if you were imagine you're a visitor of the salon or any exhibition in 1900, what is the main artist of the period? It's very difficult. There's so many artists, including survivors. You know?
Yeah. The Impressionists coming through,
yeah,
even, aren't they?
Impressionists and Rodin Alter, but also Boucreau and the classical tradition, and they have the young Picasso, and they have Vendongen is already there doing cartoons. And
oh my gosh!
It was certainly very difficult to understand what happened. There were so many artists from everywhere, also thousands of American artists and Dutch and less English than any other country, because the British tradition was quite different from the continental schools. It was very confusing to understand what will emerge from that extraordinary period with so many contradictions.
Absolutely. Well, I love this idea of the sort of aged impressionists there alongside, like you say, Picasso and the modernists, and then this idea of the cultural mix of everybody coming from all over the world to Paris. Paris was the place to be. But alongside that as well, you know, when I think about the change in attitude that must have been coming about at that time with steam travel, travel by train, the idea of moving fast, everything seems to speed up, doesn't it? You've got the Eiffel Tower springing up, but in your own building in Le Petit Palais, because that's dated to what, 1903, is it?
1900.
Just 1900, bang on. Because that goes up quickly, doesn't it, as well? And they're finding new technological means of getting buildings up.
Yes, for example, we have two incredible staircases that are made of concrete, one of the earlier use of concrete. It looks like an 18th century pattern, but it would be impossible to build it with stones. It's recover of fake stones, but have to be built very quickly, like the roof with the steel and iron constructions. At that period also, we have less rule for the workers.
Uh-huh.
So we could do things very quickly, perhaps for that reason. People were working very hard and with less security than now, unfortunately, which means that in 2 years they succeed to rebuild quite a city. Paris was fairly new at that time with all those boulevards. You know, we thought that the Haussmann works was during the Second Empire, but of course many boulevard avenue were built a little later, in fact.
Well, Haussmann is doing it under Napoleon, isn't he?
Yes.
And then you get coming out of that into the Belle Epoque, mm-hmm. there's I suppose, like you say, it's just accelerating, isn't it? Happening even quicker. And Le Grand Palais, right opposite your gallery, the whole construction of that, the ceiling of that, is glass, isn't it? Glass,
yeah,
and
glass
steel, which new materials are coming in.
Not so new, because of course you know the Crystal Palace in London.
We have to give credit to Crystal Palace.
Le Palais de l'Industrie in Paris, which is different. Perhaps it's not only the exaltation of the technology, like in 1889 with the Eiffel Tower.
Mm-hmm.
In 1900, things are recovered with ornament. It's a period where technology is already assumed. We know how to do that, so we don't need to promote, to exaggerate, and to show obviously this is made of steel. You can use all those technology to create new shapes.
Oh, I love that idea. So you're almost hiding the workings now. Everybody knows that the technology is in place, so you can decorate it, colour it, and you know, make it look pretty.
Yes, but in a huge scale, which have been. Would be impossible only with traditional materials.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so, I mean, in a way, we're kind of drawn back to the painting again, aren't we? Because I suppose this is a decadent time. This is a bright and colourful time. And maybe when we get to World War One, this time does seem a little bit tasteless, perhaps, a little bit frivolous. Is that how it was perceived?
Perhaps that's why this expression, La Belle Époque, is a late invention about the period before the disaster of the First World War. It was very different in, you know, at the time of the other Universal Exhibition in Paris, 1937, where was built the Palais de Chaillot, Le Trocadéro, and it was very different because France was welcoming once again all the nations. But we could see the building of the Soviet pavilion, and just in front you have the pavilions of the German Reich, and so on. So in the middle, a French state was rising a column of peace. But everybody knows that it was very fragile things, and so the mood was very different for the Universal Exhibition of 1900 than the exhibition of 1837.
Really?
In 1937, people were trying that perhaps there is some possibility of peace by education, technology, and so on. Instead, in 1900, you have here as a guest the Emperor of Germany and the Tsar of Russia, and so on. And people couldn't imagine that it became such a nightmare in 14 years later.
Oh gosh, you know what though, it feels so prescient at the moment, doesn't it? There's this horrible sense in which history cycles round and round and round. This is so interesting talking to you, Christopher. I'm so grateful to you for taking a time out today.
Thank you very much.
You have chosen such a beautiful painting, and I know that the Art Detective listeners are going to adore it. Thank you for taking the time out. Listeners, I hope you have enjoyed this. If you have, you can subscribe to the podcast by going to historyhit.com/artdetective. You can follow me on Twitter. I'm Dr. Yanina Ramirez. Do get over to Paris. Do come and see Le Petit Palais. It's the most extraordinary gallery and museum. I leave you from beautiful springtime Paris. Adieu.